Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. If The Simpsons are among the most well-traveled families in TV history, one of the key figures behind the show isn't far behind. My guest, Mike Reiss, has been to 134 countries and counting. The Emmy and Peabody recipient is a longtime writer for The Simpsons, which was just renewed through its 34th season and was co-showrunner way back in seasons 3 and 4. Reiss's new show on the Believe podcast network is called What Am I Doing Here?, where Reiss talks about the highs and lows of world travel, including stops in North Korea, Iraq, Iran, and the North Pole.
I filled out my visa application listing my religion as Jewish. They ask you religion in those countries. And I listed my occupation as writer. The travel agent called in a tizzy.
They'll never let you into Iraq if you say you're a Jewish writer.
Well, I'm not Isaac Bashev, a singer. I'm Jewish and a writer, but I'm not particularly good at either. By the way, that's one of those witty lines I thought up later. I think my actual response was, yippee, I'm not going to Iraq.
Mike Reiss, welcome back to the Roundtable.
It's great to be back on the Roundtable. Thank you.
You finally joined the ranks of podcasters. Did you expect to be doing this at this point in your career?
I absolutely did not. And, you know, it's so funny because I think there are literally a million podcasts. It's not a hyperbole. There's literally 1 million podcasts. So jumping in is like telling people, I've decided to send email. You know, there's nothing that exciting to it. But yes, I decided to do it. I'll tell you the story, which is, I travel a lot, and it was just something I would travel, and then I would go into The Simpsons every week, and, you know, everyone was going, what'd you do this week? Oh, I watched Fargo, and I'd walk in, oh, I went to North Korea, you know? And so finally, one of the writers there said, you should write a book, and I knew this was a bad idea. I know nobody wants a travel book, because every writer who takes a trip thinks he's going to write a travel book. So I wrote, just to please this one writer at the show, I wrote this long book proposal. It was a lot of work. I sent it to publishers. And of course, they told me, one guy said, I literally have 6,000 of these in my files. It's like, nobody wants a travel book. And I told this guy at work, and he said, well, you should do a podcast. And I go, oh, please, you know, stop telling me what to do. I don't know why I do what the guy tells me. You know, I'm not married to him. But he said, do a podcast, man, because I got a lot of friends in the podcast business. I know everybody. So I buy all the equipment. I make 3 sample episodes of the podcast. I send them to this guy. And he said, I don't really know anybody in the podcast business. But he did. He got me off my butt. He got me to do something. So I made these episodes and was able to peddle it to the Believe Podcast Network. And they distribute to everyone. So if you're interested in the podcast, you can get it on iTunes and Spotify and Stitcher and all those good places.
Was this project something you did in the pandemic because you couldn't travel as much?
No. In fact, it tells you a lot about my life. One reason that I think makes this different than a lot of different travel stories, it's not just that I go to these horrible places nobody wants to go, and it's not just that I can make it funny. You know, people go to, Vice went to North Korea too, but they didn't make it funny. But the big thing about it is I've been to 134 countries, and I don't want to go anywhere. This is not my idea. I don't really like traveling. It's my wife loves to travel, and I love my wife. And if I want to hang around with my wife, I've got to go to, you know, Ivory Coast or Cameroon or some whatever place she's thinking of next. So, So that's why I travel. And obviously, yeah, I had a lot of time during lockdown, but not as much as you might think, because again, it was for the first 4 months of lockdown, I finally got to have the marriage I wanted to have. We just sat around, we watched TV. I thought, hey, this is pretty good. And then one by one, countries would open up. they were opening up to America, and my wife would just jump on it one by one. We went to, so for the past 6 months of lockdown, when everybody's still sitting in their homes, I've been to Africa twice. I've been to South America twice. I cruised the Galapagos. I went 2 weeks ago, I was in Kenya. And then a week ago, we went right from Kenya to Alaska to watch the Northern Lights. So I went from Africa in the, you know, to Alaska in the dead of winter. So this is my life, folks. Now you understand why I can write a comedy podcast about it.
I've read a lot about tourism around the Northern Lights, and not everyone gets to see it, even if they take the trip, because you got to be pretty lucky with the weather on that particular night. So were you able to see the Northern Lights, and did it live up to the billing?
This is a good enough story that it's actually, I tell the story over two different upcoming podcasts, which is, first, about 10 years ago, she drags me to Iceland. In fact, I don't know when this will air, but that's the next episode. I think I talk about going to Iceland to see the Northern Lights. And we went to the best spot to see them, and they're up there. And here's the thing nobody tells you about the Northern Lights, you know, which is they photograph beautifully. They look perfect on camera, which is why they look so great in National Geographic. In person, they don't look like anything. They are gray. There's no color to them. It's just a trick of the camera that somehow they photograph so well. And this is, I consider it like a worldwide scam about the Northern Lights. Everybody goes to see them. They freeze their butts off. They take great photos. Then they come home. Oh, you had to be there. You had to see it. Well, you don't have to go there. You don't have to see it. They look terrible. I saw that in Iceland. And then 10 years later, we go to, and you know, and she's going, let's go to Alaska and see the Northern Lights. And I'm going, they suck. And she said, maybe it's different in Alaska. And we go to Alaska. So yeah, I saw them doing their thing. They suck again. The Northern Lights suck. And nobody even talks about there's Southern Lights too. And even explorers will say, well, those are kind of suck. They're not so great. So I'm sure we'll be going there soon.
How come your wife just doesn't go without you?
You know, I think she'd love to. I don't think she'd have any problem going without me. But, you know, I like her. I miss her. You know, well, you've met me. I mean, I'm really tough on the eyes. I don't know why anyone married me, but instead that I have this beautiful, brilliant woman who married me. And so maybe this is why she travels. She's just trying to get the hell away from me. And she's thinking, well, maybe he won't follow me to Libya, but I go there.
She's on your podcast too. She makes some cameos.
Yes, she is. You know, it's as much a comedy podcast and a travelogue as it is a love story. So she pops up there playing herself. I should say about the podcast, it's not interviews, and it is very tightly scripted. It's me telling stories, true stories, funny stories about where I've been, and I try and make it sound conversational, but boy, it takes me about a week to write every, you know, 15-minute podcast. And anytime I'm talking to somebody else, just so you don't have to hear this voice for 15 minutes a week, if there's a real person in it, I try and get them to play themselves. So my wife is in it. Different friends of mine have been in it. And then for different people I've met in my travels, I bring in voiceover actors. And this is the fun part, which is I live in Manhattan, and I have a doorman in my building. And he, you know, like a doorman, he just ignored me for the first 3 years I lived here. And then one night he saw me on TV on a Simpsons documentary, and he goes, oh my God, this is somebody who can help my acting career. And since then, for 13 years, whenever I walk into the building or walk out, this guy, Trevor, would audition for me. He'd do shtick. So, of course, this made my life a living hell. And then, so until I started doing the podcast, and I said, gee, I need some voices. I need someone who's willing to come up to my apartment and, you know, record in my home studio. I'm going to try Trevor, you know, let's see how good he is after this 13-year audition. And the guy is fantastic. He is fantastic. So he literally plays everybody else in the world. And there's nothing I've thrown at him he can't do. He can do every accent. He's funny. He takes direction well. So that's been a real godsend.
That's going to change interactions in the lobby for everybody else now.
I know. Well, now he's a star. I mean, you know, he was tough to get along with as an aspiring actor. But now, you know, he's the king of all podcasts.
So you say that you would prefer not to go everywhere around the world. Where does your wife's wanderlust, where does that come from?
She, when she was a kid, she went around the world. She was not well off. But these were the days of Europe on $5 a day and India on 5 cents a month. And her mother, who had also never been out of Long Island, just decided to take these trips. And they went around the world and they did it again the next year. And they, you know, they not only went to places like Iran and Iraq, they went to places you can't go anymore. They went to Afghanistan and she went to the Kingdom of Swat. And I thought, what, is that the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? No, it's a real place. She went to the Kingdom of Swat. So she just loved this. And in fact, when we got married and I was working so hard at The Simpsons. We had no honeymoon until 5 years into the marriage. And this was literally, you know, we'd been together for 2 years, married for 5 years. We'd never taken a vacation together. And I said, well, where do you want to go on the honeymoon? And she said, well, I've narrowed it down to Yemen or Siberia. And I said, honey, those are places people are trying to get out of. And I had to explain to her, I hadn't even been to London yet. So that was it. We went to London. We did a lot of quick catch-up tours. We took a lot of bus trips. You know, where you would see Europe, or, you know, 14 countries in 6 days on a bus. We did a lot of those going all over the world, just catching up. And I kind of liked them and it was fun. And I actually, I was able to turn all these bus trip experiences into a movie, a really, really terrible movie called My Life in Ruins. Some of you may see it pop up on cable. It stars the woman from, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and she made a kind of a big fat Greek salad out of my script. But you know, it was funny when it left me. But anyway, I got a movie out of it, and you know, I go reluctantly on these trips, but I generally do enjoy them. And you know, there's a lot of pleasant surprises in traveling, like going to Iran. Iran is a place. You know, I just assumed, all right, we'll go to Iran. I'll get my head cut off. Maybe we can stop after that. And instead, Iran is one of the loveliest countries on earth. It's one of the nicest places and full of wonderful people. I cannot wait to go back to Iran. And you don't hear a lot of Jewish guys saying that, but that was great. So the podcast, I have to point out, is not all just me complaining. It's full of these... It's a lot of me saying that place you heard is nice is terrible, and that place you never want to go is actually really pretty good.
We're speaking with Mike Reese about his new podcast. It's called What Am I Doing Here? And it's about his life traveling. In one of our earlier interviews where we were talking about The Simpsons, you were talking about going back and forth between New York and L.A. to work on the show one day a week in recent years. And you know, I've done some traveling internationally. I like it too, but I have a really hard time being on a plane, you know, for 18 hours. It's awful. Do you have any tips about actually getting there?
You know, it's the answer to that is the answer to all of life's problems, which is drugs. on super long flights, I take a sleeping pill and this is kind of funny. The first trip, I talked about our honeymoon, the first trip we'd ever taken together, I'd been working on The Simpsons so very hard. And then she books us this big trip, I think, to go to Germany. Again, you know, places they love the Jews. So she books us this trip to Germany, and I was sick. I had a cold, and they're giving me drinks on the plane, and I take a cold pill, and then I went into a semi-coma. This is our first vacation together. I'm on the plane in a semi-coma. She's shaking me. She can't rouse me. She thinks, well, I've killed my husband, and, you know, I'm still going to take the trip. And it was a very interesting experience. And this is the kind of story I don't tell on the podcast, but I'm in a coma on a plane taking my first vacation in 5 years, and I wet my pants. And if you've ever wet your pants as an adult, you kind of go, hey, this is not bad. This saved me a lot of trouble.
You don't have to ask the person to let you out of the row or anything like that.
No, that was it. I mean, I just woke up with kind of wet pants, and by the time they were in Germany, they dried out a little. But, you know, we're in Germany, and we're waiting online to get into some castle, and I remember thinking, well, maybe I'll just wet my pants again. So that's the kind of thing you learn from traveling. I'm sorry. I've never told that story before, but it came to mind. So what was the question?
Oh, yeah. Just traveling is great, but it's really draining getting there. Sometimes you wake up and it's the 2 days later when you're getting off the plane and your body has to acclimate. I went to Australia on a trip in 2009, and I missed the whole first day with food poisoning. And that, you know, that's just as memorable now when I think about that trip as everything else I did.
Yes. And in fact, again, I think it's episode 10 of the podcast is all about getting sick and getting food poisoning and toilets of many lands. And to me, that's part of what's interesting. That is an experience it's more interesting than doing the tourist things is what happens when you get really sick in, you know, Sierra Leone or something like that. And in that case, you know, my poor guide is just driving all over the jungle trying to find a clinic to take me to. And we found a clinic that clearly had been a bicycle shop like a week before, you know, they hadn't changed. It's a clinic, but there were bikes hanging from the ceiling. And I meet with a doctor, and he just gives me this tiny green pill. And I took the pill, and within 3 minutes I was cured. I not only was, you know, I had stomach upset. Not only was I cured, but I felt like I could run the Kentucky Derby without a horse. And it was just magic. It just went away, and the entire cost for the visit, including the pill, was 72 cents. So again, that's an experience. I kind of enjoyed that. I'll tell you one more. It was in Syria. We went to Syria, and you can't go to Syria now. Syria is one of the nicest places in the world, and I think the Syrian people are the finest people I've met. I wish the entire world was full of Syrians. And they were so nice that I just joined a group of them who were having dinner one night. They didn't know me. And there was a pitcher of water on the table. And I start drinking the water. And the Syrians are going, don't drink our water. And like an idiot, I go, if these people are so nice, how bad could their water be? And, you know, I'm an idiot. What kind of guy goes to Syria on a vacation? I drank the whole pitcher of water, and that's where I found out that the hospitality of Syria doesn't extend to the microbial level, and I got really, really sick. And I remember I went to Palmyra, which is a World Heritage Site, and I threw up all over Palmyra. You know, this is a ruin that had lasted for 3,000 years, and one sick tourist managed to wreck the place.
Health aside, have there ever been any times where you were in danger in any of these far-flung places?
Yes. There was a place, we went to Honduras, and, you know, I'm sure there are many wonderful people in Honduras and lovely places there, but I didn't see them. We were there a week, and it was just a week of everybody yelling at me, and I complain all the time about Honduras, about the hotels and the restaurants and the people and the attraction. And then I go, oh, and I got kidnapped there. I always forget I got kidnapped on Honduras because it was like the fourth worst thing that happened to me on that trip. But yeah, it was a, they had hired a driver to take us somewhere and we were in the middle of the jungle and the guy demanded $100 or he was going to dump us in the middle of the jungle. And, you know, I kind of, this is how I get through these trips. I wasn't really listening to him. So I didn't realize he was asking for $100. I thought he was asking if I needed $100, like if I wanted to go to an ATM. So he's going, I want $100. I go, no, no, no. And then he goes, he immediately lowered his demand to 100 quetzals. That's the local money. So that's $12. And again, I said no, because I wasn't really paying attention. So he's really mad. This is the guy. He's going to turn us out in the jungle. But I had stood up to him. So he's driving at 90 miles an hour. He just wants to get rid of us, get us where we're going that day. And he ran over a chicken. I remember that. I said, you ran over a chicken. He goes, I don't care. And it's like, oh, big man. And we had prepaid for lunch and he just skipped the lunch stop and kept our money. So I'm at the time I was 55 years old and a bully took my lunch money and he finally got us where we're going and we check into the hotel and then, and we're done with this guy. And then like a bad horror movie, he comes back into the hotel. He's waving a piece of paper and said, you have to sign this. It says I did a good job. And that was it. And I refused to sign the paper and he tried to hit me and the police took him away. So yes, that was trouble. That was about the worst thing that ever happened to me.
What's on the list for either you or Denise where you haven't gone yet?
There, she wants to go to Afghanistan. She wants to go there. We got an email saying Afghanistan is open for tourists. And this is the one I said no. And my wife looked at me. My wife speaks five languages, but she'd never heard the word no before. She goes, I didn't know you were capable of that. I said, no. She said, I want to go to Afghanistan. I said, if you can find me one person on earth who thinks this is a good idea, we'll go to Afghanistan. And she goes, we have friends in the State Department and ambassadors and people in politics. Nobody would back her up on that. She, you know, nobody would say go to Afghanistan is safe to go to. So I said, that's it. No Afghanistan anywhere else but Afghanistan. And that's how we wound up going to Pakistan.
I mean, that's pretty close.
It is. I should have known there was a Stan in my future.
So I mentioned at the outset that The Simpsons are known for traveling all over the world. Have you brought your own experiences to bear on The Simpsons' experiences when they go overseas?
I got to say no. I mean, I've tried. I try. It drives me crazy in that nobody wants to use my stories on The Simpsons. And yeah, The Simpsons have been everywhere. I think they've been to something like 30. They've been to every continent. They've been to about 30 countries. We're running out of places to send them. I think I was able to help, I know, on the Brazil episode.
You guys got in trouble for that a little bit.
Yes, we actually, we did a Brazil episode where, this is a true story. Let me see if I can recall this. We did a Simpsons episode and we got sued by the Brazilian Tourist Council. I think they sued us for $35 million. And they said, when the Simpsons came to Rio de Janeiro, they encountered pickpockets, kidnappers, rat-infested slums, and wild monkeys. There are no wild monkeys in Rio. And on top of that being ludicrous, I went to Rio, and there's thousands of wild monkeys in Rio. I mean, it was just... it's just a bad place. I got robbed there twice. So we got sued by them. Of course, there was no, you know, they couldn't collect. There was no lawsuit there. So we did what we never did, which is we sent the Simpsons back to Rio. We did another episode, I think, just to drive them crazy. And that was where I was able to kick in a few things. But mostly, you know, at The Simpsons, they don't care what happened. They just want it to be funny.
How does your job work there now? And I should just mention, this show marked its 700th episode just a few days ago as we speak and has been re-signed for two more seasons at Fox. You're obviously, you know, you're not the showrunner anymore, but you're still working on the show as a writer. How does that work?
The way it works is, and I think this is what keeps The Simpsons good, is it's self-regulating. So nobody works there more than they think they can contribute. So there's, you know, a lot of younger writers at the show who work 5 days a week. Now, of course, a younger writer at The Simpsons is someone in their late 40s. But so there's 5 day a week people. There's 3 day a week people. There's some people work 2 days a week. And I work 1 day a week. I've been at the show 32 years. I think I've only got one good day a week in me. And people have suggested, you know, I cut back to like an hour a month. But so I work every Wednesday at The Simpsons, and that's why I moved to New York. I said, gee, why do I still live in L.A., which I hate, just to work 1 day a week in Los Angeles? And so, yeah, for 15 years, I've been flying back and forth. I fly to L.A. Tuesday night. I work Wednesday. I get on a red eye and fly back to New York or Pakistan or wherever I'm going that week. And then the pandemic hit. And people, when I would tell people, oh, yeah, I fly back and forth every week, they'd say, can't you telecommute? And I would always get so pretentious and go, oh, no, this is like jazz. You know, we have to riff off each other. We all have to be in the room at the same time. And then the pandemic hit, and we put the show, we moved the entire production onto Zoom. And I found out, oh, it's nothing like jazz. It works perfectly well on Zoom. And they knew it from the first day we tried to do a writer's room on Zoom, that it worked perfectly well. And then we found out every step of Simpsons production can be done on Zoom. We can telecommute it. So, you know, while every other show and every movie in Hollywood has been shut down for a year, we've continued making episodes. We not only haven't missed a day, we're actually ahead of schedule, which we've never been in 30 years.
Will you keep it in that production style even after the pandemic?
I think we'll do exactly what a lot of companies do, which is, hey, this has been working fine. Let's change it. I get the feeling that they'll start moving us all back in September or something like that, and then I'll start flying again. But I don't know. I don't know. I think what a lot of companies are doing are thinking, we're going to go back, sort of, but we'll keep what works with this.
Well, last thing, it occurs to me to ask about your frequent flyer mile situation. Are you just swimming in them?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am in the millions. I have millions of miles at every airline. And anyone who's seen that movie or probably read the book, Up in the Air, George Clooney, is playing a guy who just flies all the time. And whoever made that movie has lived it, because I've lived it, and they got everything just right. And in fact, you would see in that movie, George Clooney would be in an American Airlines club, and I'd go, oh, that's Dallas. I could recognize the clubs he was in. So I have a lot of frequent flyer miles. You know, I'm super cheap, and so I fly coach everywhere. I would, you know, when Richard Branson has these trips to the moon, I'm going to fly coach. I know that, but I get upgraded a lot. And there was one day I'm sitting on a plane, and I look down in my hand, and I see I'm holding a rum and Diet Coke, and I go, how did this happen? I didn't order this. And the stewardess just says, you order that every week.
Oh, man. Well, I won't spoil it here, but if you want to hear Mike talk about signing up for a trip to Mars, you can do that on his podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. It's called What Am I Doing Here? And his work with The Simpsons continues in perpetuity, it looks like. Mike Reese, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you. Thank you for spending all this time with us.
Thanks for listening. That was a pleasure. Do listen to the podcast. It's funny and fun, and nice and short.
Travel safe, Mike.
Thank you.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.